Talk given Friday, 8th November, 1974. We are all only too well aware that the state of the world is deteriorating at an accelerating pace. And one wonders what can be done in order that some sort of resolution of this condition could be started. Throughout history, people have sought remedies on the plane of the trouble. They have sought to counteract the ill. And thousands of years of history have shown conclusively that counteracting, whilst it may bring about a temporary respite, does not really get at the root of the difficulty. The root of misery, of brutal behavior on the part of people individually and nationally. Does not get at the root of the ignorance which afflicts all mankind. We have been caught up, we have been entrapped, one may say, by what human beings have done and in consequence either achieved or failed in the past. And what has been done has been stored in memory, and our tendency is to look back into the past and search our old experience when we are faced with difficult situations. But the old experience has not been able ever to give us the wisdom, the insight by which we can rightly face our present situation. It is something which belongs to the past. And this applies whether it be in the field of politics or economics or social conditions and also religion. And this is a very important point, partly because it specially concerns us who gather here. Religions have laid down categorically certain things, matters of doctrine and rules of behavior. But has religion in practice in the world succeeded, therefore, in enabling man to fulfill the purpose of his being? Has it enabled him to see and understand the significance of life, or to appreciate his real worth and what it means to be a human being and live humanly? By and large, great groups have fought tooth and nail on matters of doctrine and dogma. And in the name of religion, some of the worst crimes against humanity have been committed. So there must be some missing factor. The question arises, can we search that factor? Most people will say, well, if you don't search, if you don't seek, you can't find. This is certainly true in the whole of the dualistic sphere of everyday life. It holds good in our ambivalent state, but that state means that one is always in conflict, the good against the bad, the desirable against the undesirable, and so on. And if seeking in the manner in which we seek, that is, if seeking is the answer, then it is a strange thing that in the history of man over so many thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, he has failed to find just this one supreme thing which makes him man in the true sense. He has found out all sorts of other things, but he has not found this himself, what he really is. How is he related to life, to environment? And how shall he live? Searching history, looking down the corridors of memory, is no use. It is interesting, if you like. It's an intellectual indulgence. It may, often does, give us knowledge and leads to skills in the technical sense. But this thing, this root evil, this root difficulty, which destroys man's well-being, is something which belongs to another plane altogether. This cannot be solved on its own plane. Out of some transcendent depth, there comes the healing, the whole-making, the restoration to holiness. Can we deliberately enter that depth? If it was possible deliberately to enter that depth, it could have been done in the past by a sufficient majority of human beings, so that our world today would have been quite different. But deliberation implies the use of the intellect, the use of knowledge. And intellect and knowledge are at the mercy of our desires, first and foremost, our particular values and judgments and criteria and so forth. And if we look into these carefully, we will find that in every case they are related to the self. A self which stands out of the totality. And in standing out of totality, necessarily is not in perfect relationship within totality, but is in conflict with it. So now, what can we do? If we see and really see and not acknowledge it purely as a possible hypothesis, if we see that we as individuals can do nothing, that we do not know, then we are quiet. One may say, oh, then you merely give up the ghost. It's a defeatist attitude. You shirk your responsibility and so forth. The idea being that if you do not strive and struggle and fight against this, that and the other, then you have shirked your responsibility. But if you really see, I do not know, then the selfness within one is absolutely quiescent. One just remains still and silent, but fully awake, because it takes the awakened state to know that I do not know. Then something else, this mysterious, immeasurable, unknown, comes into action. Christian teaching calls it the grace of God. What prevents the grace of God? I do, with my striving. But if I cease to strive, to struggle, and truly see that I do not know, then I do not merely supinely wait for this other transcendent mysterious power to come and do the job for me. I don't do that. But I am in that completely sensitive, silent state in which transcendence can actually function through me, I being unself-conscious. This is the great difficulty. to be truly unself-conscious. Then it just happens. It is a bit like this. Supposing one is walking through some woods, but there are clouds and it's a grey, misty day, a little bit rainy and so forth. And you're not thinking about it at all, and suddenly you turn a corner and come into something absolutely wonderful, breathtaking. You have come upon it. It's spontaneous, it's unsought, but there it is for you. See, this is how transcendence manifests. And not only manifests, this is how transcendence works. When I have ceased to seek, to struggle, and I let go, not in the attitude of despair or giving up the ghost, but in the calm, clear knowledge that this self, which is obtrusive upon the world, must no longer be obtrusive. A clear knowledge. Then transcendence functions through this. Transcendence has nothing else but that which is, through which it can function. This is the point. We are the instruments of transcendence. Now, we have considered this matter time and again. But let us tonight explore a little bit one of the world's root difficulties. There is violence, terrible violence. There is fear. Whence do violence and fear stem? Is it not because there is no love? We all know the tragedy which seems to beset larger and larger numbers of people in the world. Broken homes. The condition in which one feels that one is not wanted, not loved. Although we feel that we are giving love, we believe that we are giving love, we do not receive it. And this hurts. It's the most poignant hurt that man in his ambivalent state goes through. The everlasting problems, man and wife, parent and child, teacher and pupil, employer and employee, and so on. This relationship of man to man, in one word, is the relationship of love. And we all suffer. And we all believe. And it is very hard to give up that conceit that we don't know what love is, do we? Look at the number of definitions that have been given of love. Now that is the perfect proof of our ignorance of love, for the very simple logical reason that the immeasurable, the transcendent, cannot be defined, cannot be made definite, limited. Because the moment a thing is made definite, limited, it means that it is conditioned, that it is confined. We do not know what love means. It is the thing that we have to come upon, not by seeking deliberately. It just comes, the grace of God. If, now what is that if? Oneself is perfectly still, silent, awake, and really knows the one thing which must be supremely known by everybody, namely that I do not know. Then that magic, that alchemy works. And suddenly it is there. And when it is there, the brain makes no images of it. It doesn't weigh it. It doesn't evaluate it. One is totally given to it. But there are certain things which we can do to prepare the way, so to say, for such a thing to happen. We do not know what love in its transcendence, in its reality is. We have all these definitions, emotional, sentimental, and you'll find all of them are possessive, dependent, one depends upon another for pleasure, for companionship, for support, and all the rest of it. These are all the shadows, ghosts, deceptive things of that reality which is love. We seek security in love. Therefore there is, when that security suddenly receives a jolt or gets lost, as happens throughout history, then where are we? But we do know, therefore, from our experience, now this is what we can know from our experience, what are the obstructions to love? We can ask ourselves, is jealousy love? Is any sort of demand upon anybody or anything an expression of love? Is envy, anger, impatience, ill temper, are any of these things love? But they crop up in our human relationships with the beloved. Don't they? And if they don't crop up, obviously, outwardly, if they don't precipitate into an actual quarrel or even worse. What happens in our minds, the fantasies we go through? In relation to the loved ones, where there is love in its reality, there is no possibility of being hurt. One is just not hurt. Whatsoever the other person does or omits to do, there is no hurt. Love is totally unconditional. It is of the nature of the eternal, of what was never born, never grows, never dies. I can't measure it. If I start measuring it, I am just caught up in my own illusions. And there will inevitably be pain and suffering. So none of these things which we experience in our everyday life, these are facts, aren't they? None of these things which we experience in everyday life have any relationship with love. They only indicate that the reality of love, its transcendent nature, its eternity, is something we have still to come upon. It is not as if some superhuman power or being refuses to let love flood us. It is there permanently, always. It is we ourselves who obstruct it by our obtuseness, by the noise, the self, this little egoistic ego makes. This is the difficulty. Consider why the egoistic ego makes this noise in the world. It is hard pressed by circumstantial difficulties, we might say. But am I really hard pressed by circumstantial difficulties? What do I mean by circumstantial difficulties? That the shape of things actually present isn't what I would like it to be. I am discontented with what is. I am discontented as a being who is subject to his particular desires, instead of looking at the situation exactly for what it is, without the imposition of the me, the self, upon it. Instead of doing that, I'm all the time trying to impose myself upon the situation. I want this, I like this, I must have this, I don't want that, that should be out, and so on and so on. But you see, all this is selfness. This is our great problem. As we see that, really see it without reacting for or against that which we are seeing. This is very important, not to react one way or the other. As we see without reaction, then a transformation takes place. I, the person, am transformed from a self-centered, self-concerned individual into a selfless being. And the conversion is one in which there is no conflict, no struggle to bring about the conversion. This is the great point. It happens. See, man is a creature capable of understanding, of seeing, in a manner which completely differentiates him from all other living creatures on this planet. That act of seeing, if it is true seeing, is the great transforming power. There is a mutation of the mind, a real mutation of the manner in which we are aware of our existence here now, all the time, from moment to moment. We are aware of our situation minus the intrusion of self upon the situation. We are awake to the total situation, which contains as an integral part and parcel that which we commonly call myself. It is there, of course. But it is no longer a noisemaker. And in that state, the right action can emerge. And this right action means that none of the ordinary dualistic criteria of the world, this is pleasant, this is unpleasant, this is desirable, that is undesirable, this means security, that means insecurity, all those are completely out. What the world would call insecurity does not mean insecurity for one who is transformed that way. What the world calls security also does not mean security. If you are totally at one with the whole situation, all these ambivalent terms just vanish. They have no significance. They don't hold you in bondage. The struggle for existence, the struggle for survival, has completely vanished. It is my selfness which imposes upon myself and my environment the struggle for survival. It's quite unnecessary. It was necessary, is necessary for the animal. That is how evolution goes on. It's the law of the jungle, if you like, to draw the world unto oneself for self-preservation. Man has to be free of that. If I truly value life, have true reverence for life, is it possible to struggle for my survival at the expense of anything in the environment, including other people? How can that be right? And can I, on the other hand, play the game of being a saint and give up my life and, generally speaking, contrive the wretched situation in which I become a martyr unnecessarily? Unnecessarily. There are situations of martyrdom which are inevitable, of course. If you stand by the truth and the situation is such, one becomes a martyr, one is crushed, killed, and so forth. That is a different thing altogether. You get the point. The clarity of seeing, the intensity of the seeing, frees us from the opposed duals. And in that clarity of seeing, you know that you don't know. When I don't know, the omniscience of transcendence acts freely. Surely every one of us, sometime or other in his or her life, has experienced this. And then, in retrospect, the experience itself is gone through without any consciousness about what is happening. But afterwards, in retrospect, one says, oh, wasn't it extraordinary how that thing happened like that? It was good luck. Or if you are accustomed to the religious phrase, oh, it was the blessing or grace of God or whatever it is. We use phrases like that. But actually, we don't know what happened. So, with regard to this question of love, relationship between man and man, between man and all his fellow creatures, whether they be winged or four-legged or whatever they are, between man and the total universe. In this question of relationship, we have to let transcendence come into play through complete stillness and silence. That is to say, the noise of selfness has to disappear. It is very difficult, of course. But then, all the most wonderful things of the world are very difficult to create, bring into being. Now if that stillness and silence can fill us and we can, so to say, float in it always, swim in those eternal waters of life. If we can do that, would there be the emanation of any sort of violence from us? Would there be anger? Would there be hurt feelings? See, this business of one's feelings being hurt is, it's impossible for one's feelings to be hurt if one is selfless. My feelings, it's related to me, myself. Entirely related to me, myself. Not related to anything else. So my feelings get hurt. Would my feelings get hurt if there was real love? Would there be any thought, word, gesture, action come out of one in whom love really functions freely? It wouldn't. Time and again we hear people say, but you know, if we try to live this way, the other person takes advantage of us. Do remember, we cannot try to live this way. Either through real seeing we are thus, and therefore there is no trying to be thus. Or we do not see, and therefore we try. Whenever we try anything, we try something in accordance with what our petty little intellect sees. And that is not truth or beauty. And if love really functioned through us in that way, which meant that we were selfless, still and silent, there is no meaning to the statement that anybody else takes advantage of us. If there is something which I want to hold back, but it is forcibly taken from me, something like that happens, then the other person is taking advantage of me. But if I have no such sense whatsoever of selfness, he may think that he is getting the better of me, but the poor man is under an illusion. One may say, yes, but are you going to allow yourself to be ruthlessly ill-treated or hurt? It's not a question of my allowing myself to be ill-treated or hurt. It just happens, all right, it comes in my stride. I take it in my stride. Do I not get hurt and upset and all the rest of it? Even when I'm on guard, as we say. We are all the time on guard, but we are losers here, there and everywhere. After all, the first £15 of your insurance you have to pay yourself, you don't get it back. Whatever you do, there will always be loss, there will always be pain. That is the nature of existence. Remember the nature, remember the meaning of the word existence. that which stands out of, ex sistere, to stand out of. And whatsoever stands out of has come into being, it's born, and if a thing is born, it will surely die. It will grow, it will die. And all this is fraught with pain, is it not? It has its pleasures too. But that transcendent reality is not in that which stands out of. But here is the marvel, the mystery, the real grace, the mercy, if you like, of God or transcendence, Brahman, use what word you like, that when you or I really see this, although this organism does exist, stands out of that absolute reality, because the divine vision has flashed into one, then you're no longer standing out of, although apparently there is a standing out of. I've used this phrase several times. Eternity rides on the wings of time, and immortality lives through that which is mortal. Then the paradox is completely realized. And it is that kind of realization which marks the fulfilling of our religiousness. Religiousness is a characteristic of us human beings. That doesn't mean taking to a particular religion, subscribing to it, and then living, conforming to a pattern. Conforming to a pattern is precisely what makes us irreligious, which cuts us off from transcendence. What does transcendence do? What does God do? He does not conform to a pattern. There's perpetual creative action, consequenceless, acausal. There is no causality involved in it. It's utterly beyond good and evil, beyond the dualities. And you and I, as human beings, have that potentiality. Human, the happy creator. And the happy creator, in that sense, selfless, still, silent, and therefore supremely active, is the one who knows not any sorrow in the name of love. And for him, love is no longer a word with a meaning, with a definition. But it is a reality which has utterly done away with all that is unlove. Possessiveness, jealousy, desire, lust, and all the rest of the muck. This is the same as wisdom, isn't it? They're not two different things. And this is the same as understanding too. Remember, we talked about this some time back. Understanding in the religious sense, in the context of transcendence, is wise compassion. It is compassionate wisdom. Give me understanding, O Lord, and I will keep thy law unto the end. So when problems arise in the name of love, as we call it, in our own life, when we see other people suffering that way and in need of help, the ordinary dualistic consolations are no good. They are only a palliative. They are dope. Instead of opening up vision and producing clarity and wide awakeness, they render us unconscious, unawake, insensitive. See, time and again I've said, the psyche is unkillable. Whilst you're alive, however much one's feelings and so on may be hurt, however great the intellectual distress one goes through, the psyche can never be killed. It can never be irreparably wounded. Unless there is actual physical damage to the brain, or the glands, or certain fundamental physical things like that, let those be damaged, and that aspect of the psyche is out forever from that organism. That is a fact, after all. So the psyche can never be killed. And in that realization, we have illimitable resources where the strength and the power to go on from within comes to us. That is not an imposition of self. Do you remember that? The moment there is an imposition of self upon this situation, then that inner power is shut up. Otherwise, that inner power always works. One goes through the struggle, one goes through the difficulty, and when another person is going through such struggles and difficulties, instead of giving them mere sops, one helps that person to turn on that inward tap, so to say. Healing comes from within. Whole making. Always out of some transcendent depth.